Good evening. Like was said a few minutes ago, I don't see any new faces, but it's good to see our normal members here and their families here with us. It's the first day for a better diet, for exercise. They might make a resolution to read more. There are any number of things that people make resolutions to do. What people don't do is say, my New Year's resolution is for Bama to win the national championship. We understand that that's absurd, that it's silly. It doesn't make any sense. But why? It's because that might be something that they want, but it's not something that they have any control over. They don't have any influence on that event. People who are successful in the resolutions, who follow through on those resolutions, are successful because they take action to achieve it. They take responsibility for getting that done. And so that's what we want to consider this evening, is responsibility in our spiritual lives and really in our lives in general. But this evening, we want to consider the responsibility that we have to take in regard to our souls. In this sermon, I am, in a sense, not speaking to the McRaven Road Church of Christ. I want to speak to each one of us as individuals. And you might say that every good sermon is to individuals, and that's true. But what I mean is, I want to speak about things that are the responsibilities of the individual, not the responsibility of the congregation. Even in congregations, think about the work that a congregation does. Think about a congregation that you know, that is zealous, that is hardworking. But even there, the work that they do was started by someone. Even beginning a congregation in a new place, it was started by someone. Someone at some time said, hey, we can do this. He said, hey, I can go to this spot, and I can start teaching others, start a new congregation. Or at the congregation, they said, hey, this is something that we can do. Maybe it was an elder, maybe it was a preacher, that they were doing all that they could to teach and preach so that that congregation, that they would have a desire to excel in their congregational responsibility. Or maybe it was someone else. Maybe it was someone who was young, someone who was elderly, someone who you wouldn't think was all that if you just looked at them from the world's standpoint. But maybe it was someone who consistently encouraged the brethren, who consistently set a good example and encouraged the people around them. When it would be easier to say, this is good enough, what we're doing now is fine. Someone stuck their neck out to begin good work. Congregations don't work as some sort of hive mind where there's one brain controlling everyone. Even within a congregation, someone is the one who says, hey, guys, we can do this. We can do better. We can work more. It's an individual encouraging the people around them, even though they are encouraging them to work as a congregation. But we'll all be judged as individuals. We won't be judged by the congregation that we're in. Consider the parables of Christ that speak about the judgment. The parable of those 10 virgins who are waiting for the bridegroom to come to that wedding feast. There are 5 wise, there are 5 foolish. The foolish ones didn't receive an entrance to that feast just because they were part of the group of those virgins. They didn't go up and say, well, Lord, we were part of that group. We were right there. We deserve to come in. That's not how it worked. They were judged as individuals by the characteristics that they had. Or think about what we talked about, I believe, in Bible class this morning, the parable of the talents. That one talent man was judged on what he did, not on what that group of servants did as a whole. That one talent man had no right to go say, look what we did. No, your servants have overall, we've made a profit for you. Look what we did. That master judged his servants according to what each one of them did. We could attend the most zealous, hardworking congregation that there is. But if each one of us don't do our part, if I don't do my part, and if you don't do your part, if you don't take your personal responsibility, where you attend is not going to take any account into your case. Each of us will stand on our own in the day of judgment. In Scripture, we have so many examples. We have so many great examples we can look at and see. Just a few weeks ago, we talked about role models. And some of those I'll talk about again tonight. We have so many people we can look at and see individual responsibility. First, we can think about the Old Testament, all the people there. Think about Noah. Noah was in a wicked world, surrounded by wicked people. But he still took the responsibility that God gave him of building an ark. Abraham, he was called out of his land, out of his people. He was an individual if there ever was one. Joseph is remembered for what he did in spite of his family and in spite of his surroundings. Think about Moses. Moses didn't want to accept his responsibility at first. First he said, who am I? But finally he did, and he played a very important part in God's plan. Joshua was faithful to the Lord, even when the vast majority of his nation were not. The spies, it was Joshua and Caleb, and then the ten other spies were against him and caused the whole nation to be against them. But they still stood firm and faithful to the Lord. Or in the golden calf, when even Aaron turned away, was one faithful to God and made that golden calf. Joshua stood with Moses. And the example that Joshua set, it influenced his nation for good, even after his death, for generation after. The example that he set in taking responsibility and being unafraid to stand apart from the rest, that influenced his nation to be faithful to God, even after he was long gone. Nehemiah. Think about Nehemiah. He was a captive way off in a foreign land, serving this heathen king. Jerusalem was in ruins. Nehemiah was sad. He was upset. He was deeply troubled because Jerusalem, the city of God, was the temple, that it was all crumbled. And the king could see that. The king asked Nehemiah, what's wrong? So Nehemiah tells the king about Jerusalem. And he could have come up with any number of things and said, well, you know, it's so far away. It's so much work. But what Nehemiah does, he tells the king about Jerusalem. And then he says, send me. He didn't ask for the king to appoint someone. He didn't ask for the king to put together a committee or a study or a focus group, anything else. Jerusalem was built because a servant in a far-off land said, send me. We go to the New Testament, we can look in Acts. All throughout Acts, there's so many great examples left to us. Examples of individuals taking responsibility. Throughout Acts, we see individuals selling the property, selling it off of their own volition. In chapter 5, Peter asked Ananias, was it not yours to do with as you wished? And that's what all these people were doing. They were selling the property, something that was theirs, and then they were choosing of their own free will to take that profit they had made and then give it to the apostles. The church wasn't forcing them to sell that property. The apostles weren't forcing them to sell their goods. Jumping over a few chapters to chapter 7, when Stephen preached his last sermon, that was apparently done as an individual activity. It was obviously not done in an assembly of Christians. Accepting our individual responsibility, it will sometimes bring opposition and risk. It certainly did for Stephen. Over on in chapter 8, Christians were scattered abroad and they went and preached. They left and there wasn't even really a congregation to send them out from. It was gone because they had all had to leave. Where they went, they preached because they saw that as their own responsibility. On another chapter, in chapter 9 of Acts, you have the story of Dorcas or Tabitha. She continually did deeds of kindness, deeds of charity. It wasn't some program that the local church had set up. It wasn't some sort of para-religious society set up by that congregation that was there. It was something that Tabitha had said, "I can do this." And so she did it. Think about Paul. Paul, on his first missionary journey, he was evidently sent out and supported by the church at Antioch. But in his second and third journeys, he appears to have gone of his own initiative. He often worked to support himself. Sometimes he was given money by the churches he went to and visited, those churches that he had started. But they weren't sending him on his journey, so to speak. There was no one church that sent him out and said, "Look, we'll give you this money to go and do this, take this trip." On his second and third journeys, Paul apparently took that upon himself to go and do that, go and visit these churches and check on them. And then moving past Acts, we see examples of individuals in epistles. In a couple of these we looked at a few weeks ago as role models. The letter to Philemon was written to Philemon, of course, not to a congregation. See what Paul says about him in Philemon chapter 1, beginning in verse 4. Philemon 1, beginning in verse 4. "I thank my God always, making mention of you in my prayers, because I hear of your love and the faith which you have toward the Lord Jesus and toward all the saints. And I pray that the knowledge of every good I pray that the fellowship of your faith may become effective through the knowledge of every good thing which is in you for Christ's sake. For I have come to have much joy and comfort in your love, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed through you, brother." Philemon had taken the refreshing of the hearts of the saints as his own responsibility. I don't know exactly what the refreshing of the hearts of the saints entailed. It was evidently encouragement, some sort of support. But whatever it was, he didn't wait for someone else to do it. He didn't say, "Well, if no one else does it, then I'll do it." He just went and did it. In John's third epistle, he writes to Gaius. 3 John, beginning in verse 5. "Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers, and they have testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men, so that we may be fellow workers with the truth." John commends him for what he has done for the brethren, even those that are strangers to him. These are individuals, people who have taken it up upon themselves to help others, to support others, and to encourage others. They didn't wait for someone else to do it, and then eventually broke down and said, "Well, I guess I'll have to do it because no one else is." It was something that they did of their own initiative, their own volition. So we've looked at all these examples, all these great examples, I might say these great role models we can look to. And so there are a few applications that I want us to think about. The first one, briefly, is that the Lord holds us responsible for knowing the truth. Each one of us is personally responsible. Think about what Jesus says in John chapter 8. There in John chapter 8, verse 32, he says, "You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." In the Old Testament, Hosea prophesies. Hosea says this to the people. Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." We must have knowledge, and it's our responsibility to find that knowledge, to find that truth, to make sure that we know what's right, and that what we're doing is right, and that what we know to do, that we do it. The individual has responsibility to help the needy. In the Bible, in the New Testament at least, the individual has more said than the congregation about helping those in need. The congregation has limits, has regulations put on it by God about how and who and when they're to help people. And so far as I can think, the individual doesn't really have those sorts of limits put on them. Think about the parable of the Good Samaritan. That man, he was on that road, he was robbed, beaten, and the Good Samaritan takes him, washes his wounds, takes him to that inn. The good deeds that Good Samaritan did, he started himself, and whatever cost it was came about from that, he paid that bill himself. He didn't go and try to find someone else or some organization to pay the bill. He saw this man in need, and he helped him. Consider what James writes in James chapter 1. This verse is often taken out of context, but it's written to the individual. James chapter 1, verse 27. "Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world." That's to the individual, oneself. It's not the church's job to go and visit widows and orphans. It's my job. It's your job. Likewise, Galatians chapter 6, verse 10 is speaking to individuals. Galatians 6, verse 10. "So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." We could go on through the New Testament, listing these verses that tell us as individuals to help the needy. We won't take the time for that this evening. Many of us know people who care for orphans. They put together fundraisers as individuals and give as individuals or as the businesses they own to assist in adoptions. There are many who go through great hardship and great personal trouble to be able to help the fatherless. There are many, many people that I know who take money, who take their time, even when their time is not necessarily, they don't have a lot of free time, even when they're not well off. They use the money and their time to go and help widows. They can't give them, assist them financially. You know, they might cut their grass. But the point is that something through the church, some sort of program through the church, is not how God has planned for those widows and those orphans to be taken care of. It's the individual's responsibility. It's mine and it's yours. And another, maybe the greatest responsibility that we have, is to spread the gospel. If you can preach the gospel yourself, you have a responsibility to do that. I don't necessarily just mean just being a full-time preacher. What I mean is using the opportunities that you have to preach the good news of Christ to others. And if you, for whatever reason, can't do that, maybe you're sick, or maybe for women you're restricted by the roles that God has assigned, you can still do great and important work. Paul, in his letters, he often spoke of various women as his fellow workers in the gospel. These women played a vital part with their hospitality, with their kindness, and with their love to the success of Paul spreading the gospel. Inviting others to hear the gospel, it's a very important work. Just offering to have Bible studies with people in their home. And frankly, as someone who stands up here fairly often and speaks, just having someone there in the audience is encouraging. An individual can use their business interactions as a way to tell others about Christ. We have so many opportunities. And in this country, we have so many freedoms to tell others about Christ. And it's our responsibilities as individuals to use those opportunities. It's a terrible thing when we waste those opportunities, when we say, well, someone else can do it. What I haven't told you about this sermon is that parts of it are adapted from one preached nearly 60 years ago amidst the problems of the 50s and 60s. If you and I each are individually responsible, many issues like that will not come up. Issues like took place in those decades would practically resolve themselves. If each one of us were responsible for what God's given us to do. But before we can give anything else to God, what we have to first give to Him is ourself. You remember what Paul commends the Macedonians for? He commends them for being very generous financially. What he says is, before they did that, they first gave themselves to the Lord. They first gave themselves. If you and I each accept the responsibilities that the Lord gives, then we'll be the kind of people that He wants as His servants, the kind of people that He wants as His children. If you haven't become a Christian, it's your own responsibility to do that. No one else can do that for you. I appreciate Todd's song leading this evening, especially number 201, the one we sang right before the lesson. I want to read the words to that again quickly. A charge to keep I have. A charge to keep I have. A God to glorify. A never-dying soul to save and fit it for the sky. To serve the present age, my calling to fulfill. Oh, may it all my powers engage to do my Master's will. Help me to watch and pray, and on thyself rely. Assured, if I my trust betray, I shall forever die. It's up to each one of us. It's each of our responsibilities to become a Christian. It's up to each one of us to accept that gift of life that Christ offers. When Christ says, follow me, it's up to each one of us to follow Him for ourselves. If there's anyone here tonight that needs prayers of encouragement or help for bearing that responsibility, for following Christ, we'd love to pray for you, to help you, to encourage you, to do anything we can for you. And if there's anyone here who's not a Christian, we encourage you to become one, to take responsibility for what Christ offers you. If there's anything we can do for anyone, please come while we stand and sing.